You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including why it's hard to put a price on emeralds, or at least the stadium for the team, how a flower associated with hope and new life may be polluting the water in Del Norte County, and students with existential questions, not just about their life, but about the future of Southern Oregon University. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Roman Battaglia, politics, environment, and occasional sports reporter.
Okay, Roman, we're starting with you today. You're our occasional sports correspondent, as you mentioned, and we got an update this week on the effort to build a stadium in Medford to host the minor league baseball team, the Eugene Emeralds. What went on this week?
Yeah, there was the city council meeting that happened. It was pretty long, 2 hours, and all about this talk. There were a lot of business people from minor league, and I think some major league baseball people came to convince the city to essentially continue moving forward with building a new stadium, which is what they've been trying to do. We've heard a lot of what we've heard before from these people about the benefits of having a baseball team here and a stadium. And we also heard from city staff about the funding sources from a stadium and got a little bit more of an idea of how they would actually fund building a stadium like this. And then there were also lots of questions that the city council needed to answer for staff to kind of continue moving forward. The team would want to start playing here in Medford in April of 2029, which is fastly approaching and is really quick, especially for a project like this magnitude for a city to build.
Yeah, there's like no design for it yet. No work's been started. Yeah. That's 3 years.
Yeah.
To do all of that.
Very quick.
So take us back to the first inning, let's say, maybe the first at bat, who knows. How did the Emeralds end up deciding to move to Medford in the first place?
Yeah, the Emeralds are a pretty old minor league team. I don't know how old minor league teams are, but they've been around for 70 years, which I think is pretty old. And I'm not an expert in baseball, but in minor league baseball, the teams are typically affiliated with a minor league team.
A
major league team, yes. And they act as a feeder for that team. So a lot of time people from the minor league team will go up to the major leagues with that affiliate, and that affiliate will work with them to develop the players. Right now, the Emeralds are affiliated with the San Francisco Giants, but they've bounced around affiliations for a long time. Since 2010, they've been operating out of PK Park in Eugene, which is owned by the University of Oregon and used by their baseball team as well. And it's worked well for a long time because the Ducks and the Emeralds' schedules didn't overlap, so they could easily share the park. But then recently, the Emeralds got promoted to a high A team, and minor league baseball also introduced some new stadium requirements. So that promotion meant their schedule changed, and it now overlaps with the Ducks, which makes the sharing a lot more difficult. I think they have to get like portable locker rooms outside of the stadium because they can't share the locker rooms and stuff. So they started to look to build a new stadium. They went to Lane County for support. Wanted to build it on the fairgrounds. They started raising money, got some support from the state for this $90 million stadium, but they still had a gap of $15 million to fill. They ended up going out with a bond for voters to approve to fill that gap, but voters ended up voting against that bond.
And that was in Lane County?
Yeah, that was in Lane County. So that meant the Emeralds essentially couldn't build a new stadium, and they couldn't stay in Eugene, so they had to look at moving somewhere else. They eventually decided that Medford was the best choice. There used to be a minor league team here that left in 1999, but right now there is no stadium. I mean, not at least one that doesn't meet the requirements, so you know they'd have to build one here.
Okay, so what did city councilors hear about the funding options for the stadium? That seemed to be the sticking point there in Eugene.
Yeah, so the estimates right now are very big. They're anywhere between $60 to $130 million. The biggest funding source the city identified would be from what are called MIRA 2.0 funds, and it'd be about 30 to 50% of those MIRA funds. That stands for the Medford Urban Renewal Area. And these urban renewal districts are a thing in Oregon that, you know, cities and counties can do to raise money for certain kinds of developments. Basically, you define it in an area, and then any new developments that happen in that area that result in an increased assessed property value, any increase in property taxes that come from that, instead of going towards the city or towards the library district, the fire district, it'll go towards this urban renewal district, and then that district can then allocate those funds towards other projects that help build up and promote development. So the current district in Medford expired last year, and so the city is working on building a new one already, and so that could be a big funding source. It'll be a lot of that money from that happening coming into the future would go towards the stadium.
And what are the other options out there?
Yeah, there's other – and these are all sort of things that would all have to be contributed for the stadium, all parts of it. That would include maybe a car rental tax they talked about, a 2% tax on car rentals, having lease payments from the team. They would obviously be leasing out the stadium, doing stadium naming rights. And then there were also some other unknown sources that they said that we don't really know. There's like a – significant 20 or so million. They are just like, we don't know where this money is going to come from, but we have to figure that out. It could be private funding, could be more state support, could be a bigger contribution from the team up front. We're not really sure. But this MIRA funding that they describe kind of makes the city council nervous, especially if they dedicate this money to the stadium before this MIRA is even stood up yet. The public, they city council staff said, don't really like it when the minds are already made up about where this money is going to go. So the city decided they really need a better estimate on this project. That estimate, I've said, 60 to 130 million is very wide. That's a lot. We don't really know.
It may cost this amount or more than twice as much.
Exactly. Yeah. So they basically decided to spend up to $1 million on an engineering study to get a better estimate of the stadium costs. There's things like being near Bear Creek. There's this major sewer line that kind of near the stadium where could make things difficult. So they're going to get a better estimate on how much the stadium is actually going to cost. Is it going to cost $60 million? Is it going to cost $120 million? You know, city councilors basically said if it costs $120 million, it's probably not going to be happening. But if it costs $60 million, we could probably make it work. And the owners of the Emeralds also agreed to contribute to that study, but they didn't say how much yet. I know that was a thing city council had talked about. They wanted the team to contribute to the study as a show of faith that they're committed to this project.
Now, the proposed stadium was tied to a larger project called Creekside Quarter. What's going on there?
Yeah, we're not really sure what's going on there. It appears things might have stalled a little bit or gone slower than the city has expected. Essentially, this is an effort to build a conference center and hotel across Bear Creek from the stadium in downtown Medford. The city has kind of needed a conference center for a while now, and voters last year approved a 2% increase to the city's hotel tax to subsidize the construction of the conference center. Basically, this was all prompted because a developer approached the city wanting to do this whole thing. But according to the city staff at this meeting, they don't really know what's going on right now with the project. Maybe property acquisition's a bit hard. Apparently the city's out of the loop on this, so they're kind of worried it's moving too slow. They still really want to build a conference center, though, so they're sending out a request for proposals from other developers who might be interested. It could be at the same site as Creekside Quarter. Yeah. It could not, and that could be an issue because, you know, when I was talking with people about the stadium, a big part of it was like it needs to be in a development like this with a thing like a conference center. So not having the conference center next to the stadium could make things not as good for the stadium in the long term. They're kind of billed as a package deal. So, you know, we'll see if other proposals come in that look appetizing for the city, or this could maybe light a fire underneath that, you know, original developer to move faster and get things really up and running on that project.
And we'll be following those updates once we get them. Okay, well, thank you, Roman. Justin, you reported on a proposal in California to regulate the Easter lily flower industry. That was something that was new to me. Why the focus on this particular flower?
Yeah, it was new to me. I got to learn a lot about the Easter lily this week, which was cool. So they actually have an interesting history. So before World War II, Japan grew most of the world's Easter lilies. And the flower, like you mentioned in the intro, represents purity and rebirth and has actually been used for a long time, since pagan times. But today it's used mostly during Mother's Day or, of course, Easter. But I found stories actually going back to the 20s in the New York Times about a real federal effort to bring the industry to the United States. The Department of Agriculture was involved. And those efforts eventually worked. I think World War II probably helped. But now the vast majority of the world's Easter lily flowers, over 90% actually, are grown within this 1,000-acre area in Del Norte County in Northern California. And it turns out that the coastal weather is really good for growing this kind of flower. And at this point, there's basically three families operating. They grow on the Smith River Plain, which is near the Smith River and the Smith River Estuary. And the small community bills itself as Easter Lily Capital of the World, which is true.
And so why does this small industry, really 1,000 acres, need to be regulated?
Well, for decades at this point, environmentalists and some locals also in Smith River have been warning about pesticide use that farmers use to grow this flower. So it takes a lot of pesticides and chemicals and minerals like copper. I spoke with someone at the Siskiyou Land Conservancy about the topic. And he said that growers there in Smith River use some of the highest percentage of pesticides, so pounds per acre in the entire state, which is impressive because California is a big agricultural state. And so groups like that have been fighting this industry for literally decades. They say that the runoff from these growers has contaminated the Smith River. You know, this river is very important for a lot of wildlife, including salmon. It's known as being one of the last undammed and somewhat pristine major rivers in California. And in 2018, a state agency did find pesticides in estuary waters. Some residents, too, in that community say they've experienced health effects from contamination. So the State Regional Water Board has been working on some sort of regulatory pressure for quite a while to deal with this. And that's what we finally got, at least in draft form. So the California Water Board released a draft order this week.
And what's in that draft order?
It's pretty extensive, but it boils down to a few requirements. So those include setting water contamination thresholds, so having a range of acceptable pollution, basically. It would also require farmers to regularly test water sources. And then they must also create buffer areas around the flower crops to prevent runoff into water. And from listening to the very long meeting on this, both sides, you know, weren't too happy with this proposal. So the Siskiyou Land Conservancy said it's basically a permit to pollute. They want the acceptable level of contamination to be zero. And then the farmers say that monitoring the waterways, including, you know, they're required to monitor waterways that have never tested positive for contamination, is just too costly for them. One farmer also made the point that pesticide and nitrate levels in wells remain below toxic levels, at least. So residents, he thinks, you know, shouldn't be concerned about groundwater contamination. And the farmers say, you know, they've worked with the state successfully over the years to reduce pollution, and they're willing to continue to do that. But the Easter Lily flower is just a very unique crop, and it needs a lot of chemicals and minerals to grow. And they want to save this industry.
Okay, well, thank you, Justin. Jane, you covered a student town hall at Southern Oregon University this week. What were they talking about?
It's not a new topic. As I've discussed before, SOU is facing another financial crisis. It's third in 4 years. They're going to drop below their approved cash threshold sometime this year. And by about a year from now, the university projects it won't have enough cash to make payroll. This comes after some other big financial crises in 2023 and one just in the fall. The university approved a plan to cut more than $10 million over 4 years. So there are some general problems: rising costs, declining enrollment, inadequate state funding. For this crisis in particular, the budget and finance offices are understaffed. The financial reporting is insufficient. Financial policies need strengthening. This all comes from the university administration. And I should also note that JPR is licensed to SOU, but we cover the university just like any other institution.
And so this was a student forum. What were students concerned about?
Right. It was a town hall specifically held by the student government for students to ask questions of the administration. The main concerns are about the future of the institution. Will they be able to finish their degrees? Will their programs get cut? SOU President Rick Bailey did say the worst case scenario is as existential. Some of the questions were easily answered. Will there be graduation this year? Definitely yes. Some of them were asking about how to get involved in advocacy, how to help, offering cost-saving suggestions. A lot of it was dispelling rumors. So one student said SOU has already not made payroll. That is not true. That is expected to happen a year from now. So trying to dispel some of those myths and also trying to calm some of the students' anxiety about certain programs being cut. Those conversations haven't even begun yet. So the administration was kind of trying to calm the students down and calm their anxiety as well.
And were there concrete answers?
Yes and no. A lot of it is to be determined. No decisions have been made about programmatic changes yet. We don't know yet whether tuition will go up. A lot of students were looking for confidence and a real plan after multiple rounds of these big cuts. They want something that's going to fix it permanently, but That's really the million-dollar question. The university doesn't have a complete answer yet. They say that they're committed to their students, making a long-term plan, making sure there are options. Bailey acknowledged how stressful this is for students. He apologized, but a lot of it really is to be determined at this point. They're hoping to have more answers around March 9th because the university is asking the state legislature for $15 million in funding. Legislative session ends March 8th, so hopefully we'll have some more answers around then.
Okay, thanks, Jane. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.